Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's time for the Friendship Show. Join the conversation. Every week brings a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends. Sponsored by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for over 26 years, right here in Laguna Beach, California.
Welcome back to the Friendship Show here on KX93.5. My name is Mark Miller. I'm your host this morning. I'm very excited about my first guest this morning. I have known this woman for quite some time. I've known her as a teacher. I've known her as a collaborator. But I think our longest relationship has been as colleagues, because we both work together at Friendship Shelter. She is one of our clinical supervisors. Dr. Karen Redding is here.
Hi, Mark. Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for coming. I usually ask guests if this is early for them on Saturday morning, but you've probably been up since the crack of dawn.
Well, actually, Mark, you've had me on the show a couple of times, so it's nice to be back.
Great. Thanks for being here. Dr. Redding, you're a licensed clinical social worker. You're a psychotherapist, but you also happen to be the clinical supervisor at Friendship Shelter. How long have you been doing that?
Actually, you were close. I've been doing this since 2008, so it's just shy of 10 years. This is my 8th year. And I was invited into this role by the generosity, actually, of Kay Austinson, another clinical psychologist in our community who also has been deeply involved, generously involved with the Friendship Shelter.
Your part of this is you supervise social work students who are getting their degree from USC, right? University
yes.
of Southern California.
Yes.
So what's all involved in that relationship?
Well, specifically, Kay supervises some of the MFTs and the interns coming in for psychology degrees, and I supervise interns coming in towards their master's in social work. And the master's in social work involves a 2-year postgraduate program, both years of which include an internship placement. So the idea with the internship is there are things we learn in the classroom, and then there are things we learn by doing. And in the internship placement, we're really looking at just where do our theories and ideas land in the actual world, and how do some of our theories inform ways that we work, but conversely, how do ways that we work inform the development or deepening of our theories. So there really is a dance that goes on there.
So this is really, and well, a lot of people win in this situation, right? At Friendship Shelter, if when a master's level student comes to do their internship, they do that for free. It's part of their requirement. So Friendship Shelter gets to have these very talented people who are right in the midst of learning about social work and how to connect with people, work with people, relieve suffering for people. But someone has to supervise this, right? So someone with a lot of experience who's been in the field, has things to offer, knows how to think on their feet.
Yes.
And manage things as they go along. And that's the role that you play. Because frankly, I mean, how long have you been a licensed clinical social worker?
Oh, Mark. wow, Mark. It's probably going on 30 years, I would say. I completed my MSW training in 1979, so you can add those numbers up.
My goodness. I can't add those numbers up. That's too many numbers for me. But my point is, for someone with your experience, I wouldn't be able to hire you for what I need social workers to do. You have too much experience. You've gone on with your career. Yes?
No, Mark.
No.
The idea with the social work profession is that we're very interested in serving the underserved, the underprivileged. So part of our intention is not just that of what kind of salary we might command, But part of our intention is about social justice. Part of our intention is reaching the underserved. Part of our intention is trying to promote the innate dignity and worth of a person. So it really goes beyond a salary, sort of.
So this has not just to do with education, but has to do with the core values of social work?
Exactly.
That this is the work that should be done.
Exactly. And that's why, quite frankly, I was thrilled when I was invited to step in and be involved with the family and staff at the Friendship Shelter, because sometimes, quite honestly, whereas I really like private practice, sometimes private practice can be a little isolating, a little lonely, and inherent in social work is really how the individual and the environment interact. It's the micro given the mind and psyche of the person, the macro given the organization, the community, the structure of the world at large. And so we're always looking for that relationship between person and environment. So for me, the Friendship Shelter really gives me that arm so that I'm not just working with and dealing with the privacy of individuals, but I'm also working with an agency, a community, and all of the vibrancy and complexities of that.
That's a nice way to describe that, vibrant and complex. It is one of the things that I say whenever, anytime interns come and, you know, there's an interview process to see if we're the agency that they would like to work with and if they're the right intern for us. And I do think one of the things that we really are able to offer people who are doing an internship is a chance to wade right into it, get your hands on it, and find yourself working in something that is very real. And it's one of the things that I always tell social workers is you won't be sitting in an office licking envelopes in this internship.
Absolutely.
You're going to be doing some serious work with people who needs your help and your guidance.
Exactly. And sometimes, particularly given the age of many of our interns who, you know, let's face it, are young, coming out of college, mostly 20-something, it can be pretty daunting to step into a situation where you're dealing with a depth and magnitude of psychosocial, biological issues, some of which include trauma, addiction, some of which include prior incarceration. It can feel pretty daunting for the young person stepping in to this kind of internship placement. So at the beginning, most of what I'm doing is really trying to help a person feel safe, secure, contained, being on the saddle, because they don't always know where they're going and exactly how they're going to find themselves in various situations.
So what is it you actually do as a clinical supervisor? What are you advising and how do you go about doing that?
You know, I really try to stay away from advising because that really infers a certain knowing, a certain one-person system where I know something and you don't. I think I really try to create more of a two-person system, more of a collaborative arrangement. I try to model for the intern some of what they might be experiencing with the resident so that primarily it's about making contact, making connection, helping people feel at ease, helping people feel that you're interested, you're curious. There's a listening rather than an attempt immediately to step in and try to fix, change, rescue. So a lot of it, Mark, at the beginning, really is about rapport, really is about contact and connection, really is about safety, because healing can grow from that. So at the beginning, I'm not really trying to put on any hat of authority, offer any words of wisdom or advice. Basically, what I'm doing at the beginning is trying to be a model for how I can listen to pockets of your dis-ease so that you can feel comfortable being with that dis-ease And as you are okay and comfortable with your own not knowing, with your own dis-ease, then you're better equipped to sit with someone else's without being in your head, without offering ready-made suggestions, without trying to quickly fix or change something, rather than really bearing a presence, really bearing a certain compassion, a certain empathy. So we're really sort of starting from there. It's really more about the relationship as a vehicle. And I really use my relationship and what I'm trying to do in working with the intern as a model for ways that they can feel they can do that as well in working with their client.
My goodness, that's Dr. Karen Redding. She's the clinical supervisor at Friendship Shelter for USC Master Level Social Workers. I love talking to you about that because I absolutely agree with you that, you know, lots of times we look at people and, you know, when we want to say the problem with you, and really when you get down to it, right, the problem with you is that you don't remind me enough of me. If you were just a little bit more like me, I'd be a lot more comfortable with you.
Exactly.
And I think really what you teach interns, well, not just interns, I think what you teach a lot of people is that just being able to show up, right? You say this all the time, right? Show up, suit up, stand in the moment and know that this moment will lead to the next right moment. As long as we're in the moment we're in, honestly, and with some trust.
Mark, I'm glad that we've had mutual effects on each other. Thank you so much.
All right. When it comes down to it, all there is love, right?
So true.
All right. That's Dr. Karen Redding. How many interns would you say that you've supervised or built a relationship with?
Actually, I took a look at that before coming on the show. Our first year with USC was in 2008, and as of today, Balewa is our 13th intern from USC that has come through the Friendship Shelter.
So you've had 13 of these encounters. Balewa is going to, well, she's sitting right next to you. We're going to get her on the show here in just a couple of minutes. Can I throw out a name for you? Do you remember being the clinical supervisor for Mohini?
Yes, I do.
Let me tell you this. I was at up in Irvine, I was at a kind of an important meeting with the head of Jamboree Housing, and they brought in some big consultant, and then there was a some important social work agency from L.A. there called Step Up. And the executive director for Step Up was there, and he said, oh, and I'd like to introduce you to our social worker who handles things for us in Orange County, Mohini. And I'm like, Mohini!
Isn't that exciting to see someone grow, develop, and step up and out like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and she was in charge. She knew what she was doing. It was fun to run into her. Okay, how about if we do this, Dr. Karen? Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, you're going to introduce us to your current intern, Balewa?
Yes.
All right. This is The Friendship Show. We're going to take a quick music break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5. My name is Mark Miller. I've been talking with Dr. Karen Redding. She's a clinical supervisor at Friendship Shelter. She supervises this very important program that we have that allows master-level social work interns from University of Southern California, which I might just add, consistently ranks as one of the best social work schools in America year after year after year. Mm-hmm. So we're getting really good people from there. Mm-hmm. But that's what part of what she does at Friendship Shelter. She's here this morning with her 13th intern as part of that program. Do you want to introduce?
I would love to introduce Balewa Sigwili. And Balewa is unique in many ways, which you will see. We're always happy when our interns come in with complexity and richness from different backgrounds, psychosocial, cultural, geographic. And in particular, Balewa comes in with a very rich background.
Balewa, good morning.
Good morning, Matt. How? Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. We've been dying to have you. Is this early for you on a Saturday morning?
No, because I'm a student. I'm usually up at 7, so this is a perfect time for me.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. So you are getting your master's degree from University of Southern California. And they have an Orange County campus, right? You don't go up to L.A.?
No, I don't go up to L.A. since I live in Irvine. So my campus is also in Irvine.
All right. So I guess the big question is, how much longer do you have to wait before you have your master's degree in social work?
I'm actually graduating next year in May.
You are?
Yes.
So you've got a year left.
Yes, I have a layoff and I'm excited.
Are you?
Yes.
You ready to be done?
I'm ready to be done.
Okay. When did you start your internship at Friendship Shelter?
I started my internship at Friendship Shelter last year in August.
August. So, oh, you've been there a while now.
Yes.
And how long will your internship last with us?
I am going to be with Friendship Shelter until June of this year.
Oh, great. So we get you for a little while longer.
Yes, because I love working there. I love working with women, with those men and women every day.
Oh, that's really nice of you to say. So has your experience been positive?
It's been a positive, a learning experience and a rewarding experience for me. Because I have compassion for helping people.
And did you have any preconceived notions of working in a homeless shelter before you arrived? Did you have an idea of what you thought it was going to be like?
I didn't know what it was going to be like. But what I like about Friendship Shelter is that we don't just provide shelter. We also provide our population with resources. So when they leave the shelter, they can continue and live people's lives.
You know, I say more and more often, you know, in the people that we work with, and we work with this population that's designated as homeless, but mm-hmm. it only describes one part of their life. It doesn't describe their entire life. Mm-hmm. I say this more and more. The easiest thing to fix should be that they don't have a place to live. That's easy. That just involves a home. The hardest thing to fix is whatever is not working in their life internally that sort of perpetuates their existence the way that it is. Yeah. Yes, you agree?
Yes, I agree.
All right. Can I ask you, what has your relationship been like with Dr. Karen Reddy? How does that work? And what has the experience of being an intern working with her been like?
Working with Karen has been a learning experience for me and also a rewarding experience. When I go to her office for supervision, she doesn't only tells me what to do, she listens to me and makes sure that I connect with my clients and also I have respect for my clients. And also she always makes sure that I'm well taken care of too.
What does that mean? Describe that. What is that being well taken care of?
Sometimes it's not actually about talking about my clients, it's also talking about my experiences. My experiences that that connects with my population.
Do you ever, I would say this about Dr. Redding, and tell me if your experience has been somewhat similar. Dr. Redding, you can chime in. Sometimes, especially the first few times that I met Dr. Redding, I had the distinct impression that while she was talking to me, she was looking at my heart. Mm. Did you have that? Do you have that experience with her?
She has a way of looking into your heart.
And the first couple of times, it's a little scary.
No, I don't think it's a little scary, but to me, it's is having that someone who understands you, someone who can come into your heart and read you and know what you need, how to better help you. So well, that means a lot to me.
Absolutely. And I would say what makes it so nice, which makes it so teaching, is that she does that, but she has no judgment about it. She's just looking at your heart and acknowledging that's your heart. She's not making a decision about.
She doesn't make a decision, but when you leave her office, you know what to do.
Yes, absolutely. And that's, I mean, Karen, we can talk a little bit about that. I mean, isn't one of the real things that you have to offer wisdom?
Oh, I'm delighted to hear this reflection, and thank you both. Thank you both. You know, I think what comes to mind is if we're really going to be doing this work, and this work isn't just about working for an agency or working in an office, I think this work is about living in the world and dealing with the depth and degrees of human suffering that's in the world. If we're really going to do this work, then we really have to know our own pockets of suffering, our own pockets of pain, our own pockets of loss, disappointment. Because when we know that, then we're less apt to try to judge, fix, change someone else, and more able to really bear presence, to really bear witness, to really listen. And, you know, I think that the heart, the mind that can meet anything and everything, be it not knowing, be it disappointment, be it fear, be it trauma, the heart that can meet that is really the compassionate heart. I mean, that's really the compassionate heart, is when I can meet your pain because I can sit with my own pain. I might not be able to sit with your pain if I don't know my pain. And I might be more apt to try to give you ideas, suggestions. I might be more apt to try to alter something rather than more deeply listen to what that's like for you.
Isn't, again, you know, someone described it to me as, you know, wading into the humanity of it all. And that we're just people. We're all people trying to find our way. And I think it has to do with what you said. If I understand my humanity, right? If I understand my suffering, my fear, my joy, my pain, all of those sorts of things, in this sort of therapeutic or social work environment, then I know when my humanity is being engaged and being able to sort of identify and separate out, you know, what is my humanity and what's your humanity.
And essentially, Mark, that takes us into deeper authenticity. And that's really the name of the game. That's really what we're doing, is learning to be as deeply authentic as we can be. And in that authenticity, there isn't a sense of advising. There's more of a sense of presence, holding, containing, being with, allowing, and seeing what unfolds from that.
You hear that word a lot, authenticity. What does that mean? Can you define it?
When I think of authenticity, I think of the capacity to be okay with our rawness, the capacity to be okay with our vulnerability, rather than vulnerability being seen as the enemy, being seen as the fatal flaw, being seen as, oh my gosh, I'm losing it, I'm out of control. Our vulnerability becomes a way of establishing deeper contact and connection. Often, one of the things that I say, because I think sometimes I'm a visual learner and I use visual prompts as sort of a way of teaching, is, and maybe, Vilewa, you'll remember some of the things we've talked about this way, is rather than controlling, being in control, focus more on connecting and being in contact with what's here. And if what's here is a little uncertainty, just stay with that and see where the uncertainty goes. If what's here is a pang of fear, stay with that fear and see where that fear goes. I remember, for example, that when Balewa and I first met, and one of my questions with all of my interns is, tell me a little bit about what brought you into the field of social work. But, you know, with Balewa, my question went a little bit further. There was just something intuitive that I felt with her. And my question to her, and I don't know if you remember this, Balewa, but my question with you was, tell me a little bit about the places in your life where you've struggled and suffer. And I'm not going to only ask you that question without speaking to that question myself. And let's talk about how, in recognizing some of our own places of discomfort, some of our own feelings of being ill at ease, feeling vulnerable, raw, how that's contributed to our way of listening, how that's contributed to our being with someone who is in that place too.
Balewa, when you're working with a client at Friendship Shelter, what's it feel like to stand in that moment with someone who needs something, who needs a connection, and being uncertain or not knowing what to do next? How do you keep that connection?
I always put myself in the shoes of that client. That's what I do all the time, and have that connection.
To try and see it through their eyes.
Yes. Uh-huh. And then just listen to them, where they are coming from, what are their struggles are.
We're going to get into this. You come from such a particular background and have a very distinct perspective. Does your upbringing allow you more to do that, to put yourself in other people's shoes?
Yes, I have experienced suffering too in my life. So if I meet a client who have experienced suffering too, it's so easy for me to connect because I've been there. Even though maybe my suffering is different from the client, but I understand what suffering is, what it means.
We all suffer, right?
Yes, I think we all do.
And on some level, and if we can connect to our own suffering, yes?
Yes.
Then we can understand the suffering of others better.
Yes.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, but before we go, you did not grow up in America. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Africa.
You grew up in South Africa.
Yes.
Where in South Africa did you grow up?
I grew up in a small little town called Umzimkulu. Umzimkulu smells big town, but it was a small town.
It's a small town.
Yeah.
Would you describe it as a village?
As village.
All right. How many people?
I would say 2,000 people in my village.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we get back, I really want to talk about your life in South Africa and how it relates to what you're doing in America today.
Okay.
All
right.
Sounds good. You're listening to The Friendship Show. This is KX93.5. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Well, I feel like an old hobo on the sad, lonesome and blue. I was fair as a summer day. Now the summer days are through. You pass through places, and places pass through you, but you carry them with you on the soles of your traveler shoes.
Welcome back to The Friendship Show here on Cakes 93.5. My name is Mark Miller. Been having a great time this morning. Dr. Karen Redding is here. She's a clinical supervisor at Friendship Shelter. Her current intern, Balewa.
Balewa.
Oh my gosh. Balewa. Say it again. Balewa.
Yes.
Balewa. You have, I was looking at an email from you. You have more than one name. How many names do you have?
I have three first names.
You have three first names?
Yes.
What are they?
Balewa. It means to be thankful.
Oh, does it really?
Nelisa and Nolwazi.
And what do those mean?
Nelly start to be satisfied, and Nolwazi means knowledge.
Oh, my goodness. We were talking before the break that you were actually raised in a small village in South Africa. Is it common that you would have three names?
Yeah, it is common in my family because I know my grandmother gave me the first name, Bulelo, and my mom, Nelisa, and my aunt, Nolwazi.
Oh, really? So you're named after other women in the family?
Yes.
Can you, when you say that you grew up in a village in South Africa, you grew up in the countryside of South Africa?
Yes.
This is where you'll have to forgive me. So you'll have to forgive me because sometimes my ignorance can be offensive. And if I offend, just let me know. Are you in South Africa then? Are you part, is that a tribe? Do you belong to a tribe?
I belong to a Xhosa tribe.
You do belong to a tribe.
So spell that Xhosa.
All right, say that again though.
Xhosa. You know when you want your horse to move?
Yeah. This is called a clicking language.
Yeah, clicking language.
And is this a South African language, or is this do other African countries use this language?
We actually have 15 official languages in South Africa. So every tribe has its own language.
Oh, so this is specific to your tribe?
Yes, my mom was Xhosa, and my dad was Zulu.
Oh, really?
Zulu, yes.
Oh my gosh!
So I speak both languages. I speak Xhosa and I speak Zulu. So Xhosa clicks, Zulu doesn't click.
I just want you to talk like that all the time. What else can you say in Xhosa?
Xhosa. For example, an egg is itanda. So that is a Q. Itanda.
Anda.
Yes.
Anda. It's kind of a glottal thing. Uh-huh. Yeah, back in your throat. Do people just smile when they talk like that? I would just smile every time I did that.
We are used to it. Like you speak English, some people here speak Spanish, so that's normal.
Well, I get it. I mean, I love all kinds of languages. I love Spanish and French and all those things, but none of them go when you say that. Can you say something in Zulu? I've never heard anyone speak Zulu.
Zulu, sawubona, which means hello, I see you. Sawubona, I see you.
Sawubona?
Yes.
Sawubona.
Uh-huh.
All right. That's how we're going to greet each other from now on at Friendship Shelter.
Sawubona, Mike.
Sawubona. Uh-huh. What was it like growing up in a village in the countryside of South Africa? Can you describe that?
I remember when I was young, schools were far away. I used to walk 2 hours to school and 2 hours back to school.
4 hours to get back and forth to school?
Yes.
Is that common?
Yeah, that's very common if you live in the rural areas.
And were you privileged because you got to go to school, or do most kids get to go to school?
Most kids get to go to school. We have public schools, free schools in South Africa.
You do?
Uh-huh.
So what time do you have to leave in the morning to get to school on time?
I used to leave at 7, just walk with the other kids, no adults. Uh-huh, just walk with the other kids.
How many kids?
I would say 10. 10.
Did you have a uniform? I have this picture in my head of a bunch of really cute little Africans walking to school in their little uniforms.
Yes, I wore a uniform, a white shirt and a black dress. And sometimes I remember I would walk to school maybe sometimes with no shoe because my parents will only buy me one pair of shoes for the whole year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. And then when the shoes wear out, and then you're not able to get another pair of shoes until it's time? Or
I will just walk on foot.
Or you just don't wear your shoes because you want to save them for later?
Yes.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And again, is that common? Did you grow up, were you poor where you grew up, or were you average?
I'm not going to say I was poor. I'll say average.
Average?
But comparing with the American life, I would say, I was poor.
Yeah. Do you know, I kind of say the same thing sometimes about my childhood is that, in retrospect, there were a lot of people who had a lot more than we did. But when I was growing up, it never occurred to me that we were poor. Mm-hmm. Never occurred to me. Karen? you grow up? How did you grow up?
Yeah, the same is true for me. I grew up outside of Philadelphia, and you know, I mean, in retrospect, I think my family had a lot of upward mobility. So I remember, for example, when I was little, I lived in a row house in somewhat of a.
Is that a big deal in Philadelphia?
There's a lot of row houses in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And then just sort of moving up into different kinds of neighborhoods. So, yeah, I really had, particularly being the oldest in my family, I really saw a lot of changes.
All right. Bulewa, your family in South Africa, how did your family live? Where did you live? What was your home like?
I live in my small village with my grandparents, my grandmother, my grandfather, my mother, my siblings.
How many siblings?
I have 6 siblings.
So what is that like? It's like 10 of you?
Yes. So we all lived in the same house. We had I don't know if you've seen those African huts, like a round hut with a grass roofing. So we live in there. And then
I have so many feelings about that. You know, one is that, you know, Americans pay money to have that experience. Do you know what I mean? To go and to experience that and to see that. And that's how you grew up. A hut with a grass roof.
Yes.
And 10 of you.
Beautiful house.
Really? It's beautiful?
It is beautiful.
What's it like inside?
And also it's made of mud.
The perimeter. It's mud and grass?
Mud. We have our special way to make brick mud. Dirt. You mix dirt and then you mix cow
manure.
Yes. And water.
And that's how you make the house. Does your family build your own house, or is there someone who comes and that's what they do, is build houses?
Just someone in the village who has experience in building houses.
So then, like, does your family pay to have the hut built?
Yes, you have to pay someone.
You do. So someone will come and build that for you.
Yes.
What's it like on the inside?
Inside, it's the floor too is made of mud. And then to make the floor nice, we use the cow
manure.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Say, how do you say it in Kasa? Kasa.
Oblongwe.
Oblongwe?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. And then everybody lives there?
Everybody lives there. We live in the same room. We cook our food there. We have our dishes there. But at nighttime, because we also have different huts too, my mom and my dad will have their own. But the kids, we sleep together.
You all sleep together on the floor of this hut.
On the floor, we have our special a grass mat where we slept on the floor. And we slept with chickens there. And at 5 o'clock, you know, it's 5 o'clock because the chicken goes.
I would think you would know what time it is every hour because the chickens are there.
Uh-huh.
So the chickens sleep with you?
Yeah, they're very quiet actually at night.
Are they?
They don't make a sound.
I find that so fascinating to meet someone who actually has grown up in a culture that I can't even imagine, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's just, it's otherworldly to me, which it absolutely is. When did you decide to come to America?
I came in America right after high school. I had a friend of mine who was coming to America as an au pair, meaning a nanny.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent my application. We had offices in South Africa, au pair offices. And I sent in my application. I didn't know where they would send me. And an American, nice American family, they saw my profile, they liked me, they arranged everything, they flew me to America. But I didn't have any idea what America was going to be like.
You had never been to America before?
No.
Had you ever been out of South Africa?
No.
How far out of your village had you ever been? Had you ever been to the big cities of South Africa?
Big city, Durban.
Durban.
From my village, going to Durban is a four-hour drive.
A four-hour drive. How big of a city is that? How big of a city is Durban?
A big city like Hollywood.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
It's a surfing town.
Oh, is it really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, we do have beautiful cities in South Africa like Durban. We have Johannesburg. We have Cape Town.
What did you think America was going to be like? You had no idea. Had you seen pictures of America? Had you seen America on TV?
Yes, we watched a lot of American movies. I remember I enjoyed watching Bold and the Beautiful. It's a soap opera, Bold and the Beautiful, Days of Our Lives.
Really?
Yes.
That was your impression of America?
Yes.
Days of Our Lives and Bold and Beautiful. Well, it's not too far off.
No, really.
What did you think when you got here?
It was very different. I saw a lot of diversity too.
Yeah.
That's what I like about America. And also, the other important thing, it was my first time to live with a white family. I've never had that experience in South Africa.
In your village, obviously, everyone is black South African.
Yes.
And so this was the first time, really, that you had been immersed in a Caucasian white culture.
Yes, that was my first time.
And what was that like?
It was scary at first because I didn't know how to act. How was it going to be like if I was going to sit on the same table with this family and have dinner with them? So I didn't know what it was going to be like. But I learned as I go. They were so open and welcoming. So I learned something new.
I would just say, if one of the important attributes of a social worker is being able to stand in the unknown and find your way through it, I can't imagine anything more scary, anything more unknown than going by yourself, leaving your culture and your life behind you, and just planting yourself in the middle of something that you have really no context for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's how we grow as people, you know. Hmm. Sometimes you have to do things that you never think you will do.
When you came to America, was that the first time you slept in a bed?
I know it wasn't the first time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you sleep in a bed now?
Yes, I sleep in a bed.
Do you? Only because I will say that I knew a girl who came to America from an island where everyone lives in a hut and sleeps on the floor. And, of course, to welcome her, you know, that's our big thing is that, you know, we're going to get her the biggest, most beautiful canopy bed with, you know, fairies and ribbons and all kinds of things. And for the first 2 years, she slept on a mat next to the bed. She's like, I don't want to sleep in that thing. It's kind of creepy. you said that one of the ways that you connect with your clients is that you're able to put yourself in their shoes because you have experienced your own suffering. Can you talk a little bit about what is this suffering that has brought you to where you are? Does it have to do with where you come from? Or it seems to me, frankly, it seems like a very difficult life.
Well, there was a lot of abuse growing up. And I remember that we did not have anyone talk to us. We did not know of any social worker in my area. So our help was talking to neighbors or maybe to our church.
But there was nothing like a social worker.
There was nothing like a social worker.
And a lot of social work, Karen, like you oftentimes say, is advocacy. Is being able to stand with a group of people who don't have representation and to say this is not just. And so there needs to be a change here.
To be able to put words to the pain.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You know, there's a saying in neuroscience, name it to tame it. When we can name something, and acknowledge its presence, the fact that it's here, like it or not, there's something that gets tamed in just being able to do that, because something gets seen rather than hid.
Mm. Okay, well, that could take us off on another 20 minutes. So you had never heard of social work until you got to America? Were you surprised to find out that there were these people who that's what they do?
I knew there were social workers in hospital. I found out when I was 12 that there were social workers, but they were only in hospitals at that time.
They weren't working in the community.
Yes, And actually, when I was 12, that was the first time I had face-to-face with a social worker, but I did not have a positive experience. From that moment, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to become a social worker to help people like me, little kids, little children like me, and families too. But I believe that growing up, I was a social worker, because going to a neighbor's house, if I went to a neighbor's house and they didn't have anything to eat, you know, or kids, they didn't have anything to dress, I would tell my mother. My mother will divide food and give it to the neighbors. So just knowing your neighbors, what they need, that's what I knew as my family. So I believe my mom was a social worker, and then she taught us those skills.
Those are
to help people, like, know what your neighbor needs.
Relieve suffering wherever you find it, yes?
Yes.
All right. Do you know what, Bulewa? This is exactly what I said was going to happen. I have like 6 pages of things I'd like to talk about, and we're completely out of time. What's in the future for you? Do you know what you'll do when you finish your degree?
I want to finish my degree and continue with my work, helping people, listening to people, because I believe there are people in this country who needs social workers.
All right.
I want to be that someone.
That's Bulewa. Uh-huh. What's your other 3 names? Bulewa?
Bulelwa Nelisa Nolwazi.
Which means thankful, knowledge.
Knowledge.
What does the other one mean?
Nelisa, to be satisfied.
To satisfied. Yeah. Satisfied, thankful, knowledge.
Knowledge.
Will you come back again?
I will come back again.
I would love to talk with you. We'll do it close to your graduation. Maybe we'll have a graduation party for you here on the show.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Karen Redding, always a pleasure to have you.
Me too, Mark.
Let's just say that you're going to be on the show a couple times every year.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Up next, Ida Mae, Tommy J with some Radio Neighboring. You've been listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5. We'll be back next week at 9 o'clock.
Thank you for tuning in to The Friendship Show. Join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. for a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends right here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.